I practice acupuncture in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. And before that, I was a nurse practitioner. I have a master's in nursing as well. So what I'd like to do, we have an hour, right? Is present just a little bit about the philosophy and the basis for acupuncture as a health modality for bringing about health. And I would like to leave enough room for your individual questions. And I guess even after the time is up, if some of you would like to stay and ask more questions, I'm open to that, okay? Will the mic pick up if I stand up? Or do I have to sit here? I guess it's all over. Also, you can, let's make this a discussion rather than a lecture.
You can move any question.
Oh, good.
There's five microphones in here.
Hey, great. I'd like to start with a little bit of the history and philosophy for acupuncture, maybe a little bit about why I went into this field of medicine. A lot of people say, you know, what's a nice girl like you doing something like this? way back when I was practicing nursing, I think I realized the gaps within that system, meaning there is no in-between. If you were sick, you either had to take drugs or surgery. And also, they do not seem to have a grasp of what people need just to maintain health or prevent illness. It's very disease-oriented. Then I have a particular situation with myself. When I was 18 years old and I was a student nurse in the Philippines, I took something as benign, as harmless as aspirin, and it almost killed me. I had what they called an anaphylactic reaction. This is where your nasal and throat passages close up. And I was just lucky that instead of closing up the glottis and choking me to death, the swelling went to my eyelids. And yeah, for an 18-year-old, that was probably worse than death, because then you had to walk around for months with these swollen eyelids. And it was also the week when we had to have our pictures taken for the annual. So for all those reasons, it gave me the fear of God to stay away from drugs. The doctors and nurses that took care of me said, you have to be very careful about taking anything chemical, you know, which drugs are, because you don't know which ones would make you react in this way, and this is life-threatening for you. So knowing that as a teenager of 18, I said to myself, either I find something to help myself when I get sick, or I'll have to, be in a lot of pain or a lot of discomfort, or die an early death, you know? What do you do? So I guess that started the search for that alternative. And so in 1980, after I finished my master's in nursing, I heard of a course in the Philippines that would offer traditional Chinese medicine as a course for people who were already either medical doctors or nurses with the master's degree, so I qualified. So I went to my home country, the Philippines, and studied traditional Chinese medicine. When I came back, I still went back to my work at Children's Hospital in St. Paul, and it was like something opened up, a new path had opened for me, and it was like a sponge. I wanted to know more about natural ways to heal, ways to help your body to regain health without using drugs, because that was my interest for myself. So in addition to the study of acupuncture, I went to many seminars. I had gone to seminars on reflexology, massage, clinical hypnosis, and I was eager to practice on anybody who, you know, was willing to be my guinea pig. So that's how I started my practice. I did it as a hobby. I wasn't charging for my work, and yet as the years went, because it works, especially acupuncture, I've begun to have a small following of clientele, mainly friends, relatives, co-workers. And in 1984, I felt like I had enough to quit my job and start a clinic. And so in 1984, I founded the East West Clinic in White Bear. And this is my 13th year. And because of the demand for the kind of work that we do, I had to hire associates and open another clinic in Roseville. So now I have two clinics. So let me share a little bit about how does it work is a question that a lot of people always ask. The Chinese viewed health and illness much like, in the Taoist philosophy, which is looking at life and health as human beings part of a larger universe, rather than a linear view of health and illness like we espouse in Western medicine, where we say if you're cold, you don't have fever, and the two have no relationships. You know, they're two different items, and they don't have any relationship with one another. So you're either hypertensive or hypotensive, and those two are two different illnesses. In Chinese medicine, everything is viewed as a circular thing. There are dualities in every aspect of nature, but those two are really one continuum of a circle. So that's one of the things that they espouse, is that although diseases and things that we particularly feel may seem like two opposing factors, they're really one. And this is what they call the yin-yang theory of health. They say that most illnesses, if you can stay in balance, having just enough of what they call yin features and yang features, then you stay in balance and you don't get sick. So let me explain a little bit about what they're calling yin and yang. For example, hot and cold again. Heat is the extreme of condition of cold. And cold is yin, heat is yang. And there are extremes in these situations, but there's also right in the middle, like in Western medicine, what you would call a normal temperature would be 97.6, and that's normal. It's neither very cold nor very hot. So the secret then is how do you get to be just in the middle? So in situations that we might call a hypofunction or hyperfunction of an organ, those are really yin and yang conditions. They take that even to things in nature, for example. Like they look at the five elements in nature, which is wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. These are the elements that God created. Okay. Even within those elements, which have features within all of us, they have the extremes, and they can be, for example, if you look at water, when water is cold, it's solid. But when it's not cold, it's fluid, and yet it's the same water. It's the same with metal. Metal can be solid, and yet it can become liquid, right? And the same with air. Air could be hot, like in a flame. Air could be cold, but it's the same air. And it goes on and on. All these, what we call two different things, are really dualities within one item. So what the Chinese are saying then is that being we are of nature, the things that affect the universe affect us. So in other words, the study of acupuncture might be like the study that a meteorologist would do to study the effects of moisture, dampness, heat, and cold in the cosmos that would cause storms and rains and low pressure and high pressure. Those same features occur in our systems, and it's the task of the master acupuncturist to find out where the dampness is, where the dryness, where the heat and the cold is extreme, and correct that by balancing your energies. So you're saying, well, how do you do this? Well, it's a long study, and I'm trying to put it in half an hour, right? So bear with me. Of course, you know, if you were to come to the clinic and be my patient, one of the first things I would do then is ask about your history for the complaints that you have. And so the intake interview is much like what they would do in a regular clinic. But after that, then I would ask to look at your tongue. Okay, and you might say, well, what do you see in the tongue? There's a lot about the character of the tongue that would tell me about the rest of you. So when you stick out your tongue, then I'm looking at the color of the body of the tongue, and it should be nice and pink and moist. If there's a coating in the tongue and it's white, it tells me that you are more on the yin side, cold. If there's a coating in the tongue and it's yellowish, that means that there's an excess of heat in some of your channels. And then I look at the tip of the tongue, and it should be the same color as the rest of the tongue. And when it's red, that means that you have, again, excess heat. Probably a very anxious kind of person, very nervous. Tells me that the fire element is excessive. And if the borders of the teeth are imprinted in the outlines of the tongue, it tells me that there is dampness in your spleen, and that can be corrected, okay? So then, after I look at the tongue and make notations about what it looks like and what might be happening in your system, I check the pulses. Pulses, because in Chinese medicine, the 12 meridians that are the channels of energy that supply the energy for each of the organs in your body, from the lungs to the heart to the kidneys, are represented in your pulse, in your wrist, in 12 different pulses. Okay, so I go from the lung to the large intestine, the spleen and the stomach, and on to check whether the flow of energy is just right, or excessive, or deficient. And then I come up with my diagnosis that the reason for your cold is that you have excess heat in the lung channel, or the opposite, you have cold damp syndrome affecting the lungs. So the choice for what points to needle is based on your symptoms, what your tongue is telling me, and what your pulses is telling me. So it's really a very precise, I would say, a science as well as an art. Okay, there's no guesswork. There is a lot of parameters to consider. And then we look at the five elements and how they relate with one another. You might be saying, how does the element of fire or earth or wood affect me? In the Chinese study of acupuncture, each of these features are represented by two of the channels. So for example, the wood element is represented by the liver and the gallbladder. The fire is represented by four channels: the heart, the small intestine, the pericardium, and the triple heater. And the earth element is represented by the spleen and the stomach. And the metal element is represented by the lung and the large intestine. And here we have the water, kidney, and bladder. You probably could guess that one, right? Okay, so when you have a balance of energy in the channel that we call liver and gallbladder, and a balance of energy in all these channels, then you have what we call in Western medicine homeostasis. You're healthy. In Chinese medicine, they call this the cycle of creation. because wood can create fire. Fire can, the ashes from fire becomes earth. Earth in the bowels of the earth is metal. Metal minerals break down to become water. Water is needed again by vegetation to support wood, and the cycle of creation goes on and on. So as I'm feeling your channels, I'm saying this person's wood is just right, but the fire is put out. And much like features of fire being warmth, gregariousness, zest, if that's not there, the person will feel cold, what we might call depression. They're couch potatoes, they don't have much energy, they're not interested in much, they have low self-esteem. And chances are when I check their pulses, either the wood and the fire, both are deficient. And so in the treatment of conditions that you might call depression or low energy, instead of giving you Prozac or Nardil or some of those drugs that are supposed to cure the depression, instead of that, I would use the needles that would stimulate the chi, which is energy, in the channels that would create fire. It would be the heart meridian, the small intestine meridian, perigonium, and triheter. And in addition, I would check to see if the liver and gallbladder channels, according to your pulse, are also low, because wood can create fire. So it's actually a more severe situation when both of those channels are deficient. It's easier to treat a situation when just the wood or just the fire is deficient. So these imbalances could be deficiency or excess. So what we're looking for in pulses then is a nice pace and a nice volume. About 3 beats per respiration, moderate volume. Some pulses are here, some pulses are here. Some are very weak and very flat. Some are almost not there. We call that situation depletion, depleted energy. That person could hardly move. They're so depressed. They have low energy, poor circulation. They're very sick. Okay. So in addition to needling, what we use are natural herbs or vitamins that have certain qualities that you want. So for example, if this person with the low fire who is depressed, I could use things like ginseng. These are qi tonics, particularly for the heart, okay? In women's problems, for example, the earth and the spleen channels, the stomach and the spleen channels are low. And for those kinds of situations, we choose herbs in addition to the needling to bring up the energy for the spleen and the kidney channels. For example, herbs like Dong Quai would be good for that. If the patient has too much, what the Chinese call dampness, it's really edema. The patient has a tendency for edema, we have herbs that would dry those channels and normalize the situation. So, as you can see, I mean, the application for these treatments, there are infinite. You know, you could use it for hypofunction of an organ, hypotension, hypertension, hypothyroid, hyperthyroid. And the situations that may not apply, that I would say if you had this, you're better off going to the closest emergency room or physician's clinic and have it treated, would be fractures, trauma, if you lost a lot of blood, there's no substitute to have blood transfusion, intravenous solutions. If you had a massive heart attack, you know, you'd still have to go to the nearest emergency room. But for a lot of situations that are not of those extremes, asthma, depression, allergies, gastrointestinal problems. I see a lot of people with colitis, IBS, that's irritable bowel syndrome. Really, a lot of the chronic illnesses, arthritis, are better treated with this method. You don't get a one-shot treatment and expect to get well with just one treatment if the situation has been chronic and severe. So usually for more chronic and more severe situations, you need a series, maybe about 10. And then we decide after the 10th treatment, depending on how much success we've gotten, if you need, we begin to taper. You might have been getting these treatments once a week or twice a week, and by the 10th treatment, you're claiming you could be about 70-80% better. And we say, well, let's start seeing you every other week and continue until the arthritis is 100%. My goal is always 100%. Because why stop at 50% when you can be 100%? Why suffer when you don't have to? A lot of people out there are really living with a lot of pain, you know? Arthritis, headaches, migraines, allergies. Thinking that, you know, they're trying their medications and it's a little better, but there's still a lot of symptoms. Well, I'm saying this is really, these treatments are very affordable and the pain that's associated with them are really minimal. So I say, you know, why not try it and see if you could be 100%. So, for example, today is Helsa here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was looking at her pulses today, in addition to looking at her feet. She has had surgery on her left foot, and it left her with some, what I would call, fibrosing tissues. These are muscles that have chronically become strained or contracted, and they cause pain. They're lumpy. So I treated that. But I noticed that there were some aberrations in her pulse. And Helsa, do you mind if I use that example?
No, that's fine.
So without her telling me her history, because you know we didn't really have time to talk, I said to her, your pulse from the other day is a little better as far as the lungs. Instead of being cold, damp, no. I diagnosed her the other day as having heat and dampness in her lungs. And she agreed with me that she had cough. And I said, well, the dampness is better, but there's still heat. But more than that, I said to her, your kidney is hypofunctioning. There's something wrong with the kidneys. And then what did you say?
I have a family history of that and have had problems with it. I'm 47 now and I've had problems since I was in my 20s. And particularly my blood pressure started going up when I was 30, and I ended up having to go on blood pressure medication this last year, but I have a lot of problems with swelling, with edema. It sometimes affects my blood pressure and sometimes not. But blood pressure and edema are both connected to kidney and not real good functioning of the kidneys.
Right, and that's exactly what I felt in her kidney. So even for myself, I continue to be amazed at how much you can tell from this feeling, just checking the pulses. And the interesting thing about the diagnosis that we make using the TCM, is traditional Chinese medicine methods, is that you can detect functions, dysfunctions even before you are symptomatic. So in other words, if someone was at the clinic today for a back problem and I checked their pulse, I could tell that they are getting a cold even before they have the cold. So if I treat that, it actually nips it in the bud and it prevents that cold from becoming full-blown. So it becomes a preventive. And a lot of my patients say, when they come back the next week, you know, they say, when you asked me last week when you took my pulse if I had a cold, I said no. But actually, I did have one, but it was very mild and went away right away. Whereas, for example, Western medicine with their diagnostic methods, laboratory blood tests, a lot of those tests cannot really pick up a problem until it's full-blown. So in the early stage of a disease, you cannot tell if somebody has MS, for example, or lupus or some of those other diseases until it's far into the illness. So I think that down the line, ideally, we should have Western medicine and traditional Chinese medicine practiced hand in hand rather than competing with one another. Because on the one hand, TCM can pick up illnesses before they're even experienced. So early diagnosis can be done with TCM. And if you want a diagnosis that is more, you know, hard data from x-rays, etc., that's available from the Western end, which we do not have in TCM. So you really need both for diagnostics. So the trend, hopefully, as I'm seeing it, is that of having these forms of medicine as complementing one another and integrating the systems, meaning Western medicine, acupuncture, chiropractic, homeopathic, Ayurvedic, and educating people on when is the best time to use a certain form. Because indeed, there are diseases that are better treated using acupuncture, and there are diseases that are better treated with chiropractic and some with Western medicine. And so I hope that in the future more and more states would allow and license the practice of many of these other so-called alternative forms of medicine right now. And in my state, Minnesota, acupuncture has recently been legislated to be a licensed profession. So starting this year, only licensed professionals can practice acupuncture in the state of Minnesota. And really that helps to eliminate those that really do not have the proper training and understanding of the system from practicing acupuncture. I'll open it to questions at this point. There's a lot more, but we just don't have the time.
I was wondering, can it help diabetes?
I've treated people with diabetes. It doesn't cure the diabetes. It does not necessarily allow your pancreas to function again, because it's genetic, to function in the way that it should. However, it can help people to normalize or destabilize what we call brittle diabetes. These are people who are diabetics and have a delicate condition going from hyperglycemia to insulin shocks, and they have a problem just getting right in the middle. And for those situations, acupuncture can help. The other situations that I have worked with diabetes are the juvenile diabetics who, during the time of puberty, when they go through spurts of growth, have a hard time adjusting their dosages. They become very brittle, and it's very dangerous. So again, acupuncture has been used to stabilize their blood sugar and probably prevent further deterioration of the pancreas. And I've used it to prevent complications of diabetes like neuropathy, blindness, and poor circulation.
Well, does it help neuropathy?
It helps neuropathy.
And a heart condition.
Yes. Of course, with any condition, the earlier that it can be treated, the better. And there are situations when it's too far gone that even this will not work anymore. So for some my advice for a lot of conditions that you might have, instead of saying, I'm going to wait till it gets really bad to get treated, that's really the worst thing to do, because then it's harder to reverse. It's just like anything in nature. The longer something has been the way it is, it's harder to reverse it. A drought situation, the longer it's been dry, it's harder to moisten.
You mentioned that professionals are going to be licensed in Minnesota. Would you have any advice as to how people can choose a credible and a very good TCM professional in other states where they're not licensed? Or how, I guess, yes. How much do they vary if someone advertises that they...
Okay, even in many states where licensure is not required, a lot of practitioners have taken the NCCA examination. This is a board exam given through Washington, D.C. NCCA actually stands for National Commission for the Certification of Acupuncturists. And you can actually call them, they're D.C., and for, I think, $3, they will send you a list of NCCA certified practitioners in your state. I'd say start with that. If that's not available, I would say call the particular practitioner and find out about their background. Personally, I'm biased for those who have either a medical, like nursing or medical background, and then studied acupuncture, as opposed to somebody who was a cab driver and went out to study acupuncture, okay? Then you might also say, could you give me references, two or three names of people that you have treated for asthma or allergies or whatever your problem is? And that should be all right. They should be able to say, I'll take your name and these people will call you so that you're not breaking the privacy. Okay? Yes.
You've treated for hyperactivity in children?
I have treated for hyperactivity in children. What I'm finding with some of them, not all of them, but I would say probably at this point a good 50% of them, a lot of hyperactivity in children is related with a condition called systemic candida infection. These are children who probably as even as far back as when they were a fetus, before childbirth, their mothers had systemic yeast infections. And they have developed or were born with an overgrowth of this yeast or fungus in their system. And when you have an overgrowth of this yeast, it constantly produces a toxin called acetaldehyde. And acetaldehyde is like a poison. It affects all the systems, including the nervous system. And if it wasn't from childhood having mothers that had candidiasis, either they were children that had a lot of antibiotics as a child or as an infant because of earaches or tonsillitis, and they were given a lot of antibiotics. So when that is diagnosed and established, what I do is I clean them out. I give them antifungal mix to clean their systems from the overgrowth of fungus, and the hyperactivity stops. What I combine, when kids with hyperactivity are not candida related, I treat them with acupuncture and nutrient medicine. A lot of them have some major nutritional deficiencies, and many times we can find this out by taking samples of their hair or their fingernails, send them for analysis. A lot of them also have too much lead in their system. So those situations are treated differently depending on what might be wrong. But again, the earlier the better. Some of them outgrow it by the time they're teenagers, but some can even carry it into adulthood. Even particularly those that are candida related, if they're not treated, that goes on into their adult years. But what I find when I take their pulse is the fire and the wood element are excessive. And characteristic of those features is that they're restless. They can't sit still. It's not a chemical imbalance. It's an energy imbalance. It's not a behavior problem. It's an energy imbalance that can be corrected. So it's a different perspective altogether.
What's the time on treatment for a child? Like how long will it take to get results?
It depends. If the diagnosis is made correctly and those distinctions are made, you can see results after 10 treatments, 10 visits. Many of them may need maintenance after that. I have treated probably at this point maybe around 6 children with hyperactivity, and 3 out of those, so 50-50 in my small sample, had Candida infection. And one, I think, was related to kid was adopted. Mother was probably alcoholic and was probably also drug addicted when she was pregnant with this child. This is the one that I still have problems dealing with. Fetal alcohol syndrome.
I was wondering about sleep disorders, in particular sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that can be treated?
Yes. What I find with sleep apnea a lot of times is related to obesity. A lot of them are heavy, and so when they lie down, the tongue falls back, and it's harder to breathe. And so there are points in acupuncture that help not only the sleep problem per se, but in weight loss. So I combine the two. There's also another complication that we find with sleep disorders, and that is muscle aches and pains, fibromyalgia. And so those three kind of are associated with one another. And so in treating those situations, we try to find out if, in addition to just having the sleep disorder, if they have the muscle aches, which is a complication of sleep apnea. And if they're obese, then we help them in all those three areas. And some are more difficult than others, depending on how severe it is. But insomnia is a lot easier to treat than the sleep apnea with obesity. So a lot of people with dizziness, insomnia, those kinds of situations, actually have problems with the wood element, the liver and gallbladder. A lot of people with dizziness either have too much energy in the liver meridian or not enough. So in Chinese we have terms like Su deficiency syndrome causing dizziness or excess of energy in those channels. So it's a matter of correcting the energy in those channels. It's also, the liver is also related with migraines. A lot of people with chronic migraine actually have too much energy in the liver and gallbladder channels. It's a matter of correcting those. Yes?
What about allergies? Is it helpful for just food allergies or pollen allergies? And where does the imbalance usually?
Yeah, interesting. You know, in Western medicine, when you say allergies, whether it's manifested as skin or nasal drainage or food, their way of treating it is desensitization, giving you a small amount of what's causing the allergy and allowing your body to be desensitized. What we do is we strengthen your body, your immune system in particular, or the system that is affected. If it's food allergy, then it's the gastrointestinal system. If it's nasal allergy, it's the lung and large intestinal meridians. But what we do is we strengthen your immune system so that even when you're exposed to these allergens, your body can take it. Also, the difference is In Western medicine, by desensitization programs, you have to take these shots for 2 years, once a week for 2 years. And I've seen results with acupuncture in 10 treatments. And the younger they are, the easier it is to reverse it. I want to also share a specialty that I have, a book that I wrote and got published last year. It's called Conquering Yeast Infections, the Non-Drug Solution. What I am finding out in my practice is a lot of chronic problems that seem to be non-responsive to whether it's drug therapy or even acupuncture are non-responsive because of chronic candidiasis. And candidiasis is systemic overgrowth of yeast or fungus in the gastrointestinal tract. And we get this from having had too much antibiotics at one point in our lives, whether when we were young or more recently. We also get this from treatments with drugs like cortisone, prednisone, and I'm talking about, you know, using these drugs for an extended period of time, not just a one-time thing. And it disrupts the balance between bacteria and fungus in the gastrointestinal tract. The fungus overgrows, and it causes problems, almost multi-systems problems, not just one system. But the classic candida personality would be one with chronic fatigue is one. Chronic gastrointestinal problem, whether that's a chronic tendency for either diarrhea or constipation, gassiness, heartburn. Allergies, migraines, depression is one that's linked with this a lot. Or low energy, just chronically getting tired easily and needing to rest a lot. So when I am treating patients and they have this combination of symptoms as they, you know, first come to me, I check them out for candida. And I'm surprised at how many people have this. I might say right now that 1 in 3 has this chronic candida infection in varying degrees, okay? And the thing is, if your illness is related to this and you're not, it's not diagnosed, you get better, but not all the way better. You're always somewhat sick. And many of you may not be sick enough to be hospitalized, but sick enough on an ongoing basis that, you know something is wrong and you're not responding to usual therapy. So for some people, it's so extreme that it's debilitating enough that they have had to quit their jobs. And it's those kinds of patients that I wrote this book for. And for people that may not be that extreme and want to find out what they can do to reverse the condition, because if it's not reversed, it just goes on for life. They become either very heavy or very thin. I'm talking about the extreme situations. And there are people that are to the point where they have what we call multi-system sensitivity. Have you heard about that illness? Environmental illness. They react to any chemical in the environment, whether that be pesticides, sprays that you use for cleaning your counters, hairsprays, fumes from tobacco, cigarettes, perfume. Not just a little bit sneezy or itchy eyes, but really saps their energy. That's it. Do you have any other comments or questions?
I was wondering, how did we get your book?
I brought some of these flyers today. It has my address for the clinic in Minneapolis. Or actually today and maybe tomorrow before I leave, I could leave the title and, of course, my name and the publisher to the bookstore here. They can order it for you. The publisher is Bentland Press in North Carolina. Or you can get one of these flyers. My address is right here. Okay. Yes?
A couple of things. I was wondering how you checked for the fungal infection you were speaking about.
Yes.
And also, I wondered if you talked about depression some. I wondered if you've gotten involved with anyone with what they've diagnosed with mental illness, schizophrenia, or something like that.
You know, the difficulty with this diagnosis right now is the Western medical practitioners are the ones that have prescribed these drugs or medications that have caused this illness. And I think because of that, they're hesitant to acknowledge that there is such a disease. So a lot of people out there that they're labeling severe depression, schizophrenia, lupus, MS, all these severe conditions could possibly be complications of this. I'm not certain because no research has been done. But empirically, from my own experience, when I find people with particularly, not so much schizophrenia, but depression, anxiety, depression, but not the bipolar, not the extreme, you know, hallucinating schizophrenia type situation. A lot of them are positive for candida. I also find a lot of people with so-called autoimmune diseases, multiple sclerosis, lupus, are also positive for candida. And when I treat them for the candida, the symptoms of MS or lupus go away. They go back to their doctors, the doctors say, spontaneous remission.
I'm an AIDS volunteer.
Yes.
And a number of my clients use acupuncture. What can you do for that?
Actually, I have had a few AIDS patients over the years, and one, for example, Carrie, when he first came to me, he was still healthy. He was newly diagnosed. He used acupuncture along with the ACT and the antibiotic that they give to prevent the pulmonary condition.
Yes.
Which in the end gave him yeast.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he died from yeast infection, not from AIDS. Mm-hmm. So I think if he had the courage to stay with this kind of treatment and not the antibiotics, the ACTs and all that, he would not have gotten the yeast infection and he might still have the AIDS and be alive. And other person that I'm treating is just using this. However, the difference is Peter, the one who's still alive and healthy, when he came to me, was HIV positive. Carrie already had AIDS. So, I don't know. A lot of research can be done using these methods that we don't have the answers to these questions because we don't have, for example, in my clinic, I don't have the samples that I need to compare, let's say, people with AIDS treated with this natural methods and not the ACTs and not the antibiotics. But most of the people I know who died having had the AIDS diagnosis really died from the complications of yeast. Their gastrointestinal tracts didn't work anymore. And, yes?
The John Bester School, you and I were talking about, has a federal grant to study the use of various alternative medicine in HIV and AIDS patients, and you know they've gotten a bunch of money, so I think there'll probably be more coming out in the next few years because they're just getting going on the research.
That would be great. Yeah, actually, the Office of Alternative Medicine has been established since the Clinton administration came into office in 1992. And they have been giving grants to explore the effects of so-called alternative medicine, that would be acupuncture, homeopathics, chiropractic, vitamins, all those. And so there are clinics out there that have had, I think initially they were giving $30,000 a year for alternative practitioners to use for research.
Yeah.
So just imagine how far that can go. So we need more money, and we need actually the collaboration between the two systems, because you need to be able to compare the outcomes between those treated one way and this other group that's treated this way.
Do you know if any of the HMOs, like Kaiser Permanente or healthcare organizations like that, will?
In my state, Health Partners, be familiar with that? Used to be Group Health. They are beginning to cover acupuncture. There are designated clinics that, if you went to that particular acupuncture clinic, Health Partners would cover. Not all acupuncture clinics are aligned with them in that way, but Blue Cross in my state are saying they'll only cover acupuncture if it's used for anesthesia. Well, it's probably the least usage right now is for anesthesia. So to me, it's almost like saying no to acupuncture care for Blue Cross. No, they're very slow to include it, the HMO. But I think that the consumers are clamoring for it. And I think as soon as Blue Cross, Medicare and Medicaid begins paying it, the others will follow. And I think that's, from my readings, we're hoping that within the next year, Medicare and Medicaid will start picking this up. Then the others will have to follow. Yes?
Are there any benefits for a physical defect like a mitral valve prolapse?
You know, the way I distinguish between what acupuncture can help and what it cannot help, structural problems are not usually helped by acupuncture.
Well, what about the symptoms? Like if I take a low blood pressure medicine so the blood goes out the right way instead of regurgitating. Is there any help that way?
I don't think so. I think for structural problems like that, you really, there's no way around it. It's the same with, for example, infertility. When people come to me and say, I'm having problem having conceiving, can you help me? If the problem is that the fallopian tube, which is structural, is blocked, or the size of the uterus is small, acupuncture will not help. But if they say, no, that has been checked, so it's an imbalance in that I cannot create good enough eggs to be fertilized. I can fatten their eggs. Okay. And we can actually see the difference over time, because for us, they might be saying your eggs are size 18 before they came for acupuncture treatment. With treatments, those eggs can get bigger and become more fertile. And same with the male. If the problem is low semen count, acupuncture can help. See the difference? It's an imbalance versus structural.
How about with the herbal therapies? Is there any kind of certification that people go through before they start?
Yes. Acupuncture and herbal therapy really go hand in hand. And when you are trained to be an acupuncturist, the training for being an herbal therapist goes with it. But there's The NCCA also certifies in both. So some acupuncturists are certified both as acupuncturists and as herbalists. But it's the same board that gives you this accreditation. A lot of exams.
Do you have any results with treating arthritis?
A lot. Arthritis is like my number one, how do you call this? If I were to poll, you know, the kinds of people that come to my clinic, arthritis and fibromyalgia are probably the most. There's a lot of healthy acupuncture. Depending on how severe and how chronic and what type, may take 10, may take 15, but it's very good for that. The rheumatoid arthritis, of course, is more serious and more debilitating and takes longer, but it still works. Osteoarthritis is a little easier to reverse.
Is the fibromyalgia, then, is that something that would require a maintenance of the program, or is that something that you can actually reverse?
You can actually reverse it, and then lifestyle beyond that is what you have to consider, you know. Number one, a lot of people with fibromyalgia, fibromyalgia is a condition of, instead of the joint being inflamed, it's the muscle and the connective tissues. And a lot of people get this because of their jobs, you know, repetitive motion stress on the muscles. People who work on computers all the time, people who are factory workers, people who are jocks, you know, they don't want to give up tennis or whatever it is they're doing that's causing the strain, but they have to keep doing what they're doing. So we can reverse it, but if they don't change their lifestyle and they don't make some alterations in what caused it to begin with, then they'll need either continuing treatment or change of pace or change of jobs or something. I have a lot of people that work in factories like Red Wing Shoe Factory. And, you know, this is their livelihood, so they can't quit, they got good benefits, and they're saying, I'm willing to keep coming for treatments to just keep it maintained. And I know that if I quit my job, I would probably not have to come. But since I will not quit my job, I'll just do this. Yes.
It's more of a comment than a question. I find that I don't do acupuncture, but I do an acupressure type of thing, and I've done that for probably 3 years or so. And I would do it for the rest of my life because it has increased my level of wellness so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I almost think that anyone, whether they have a structural problem or not,
mm-hmm.
could benefit from holistic therapies. And, you know, and I come from you know, a very technically based job. I'm an RN and I work in allopathic medicine, but I still feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think there are more and more people who work in allopathic medicine that do feel that way.
Yeah, just gauging from the numbers of nurses, and actually I have a few doctors who come, mm-hmm. MDs. And the nice thing about this is, like she says, you can use it for health maintenance. A lot of people that have tendencies for arthritis, migraines, some of these are genetic, asthma. Sure, you can reverse an acute condition, but you can also keep it maintained so you don't suffer ongoing pain or ongoing episodes of whatever. And usually a once a month visit is all that's needed. And some even can do it quarterly, every 3 months.
I was wondering about things like cancer or cysts or conditions like that that are different kinds of growths of different sorts.
You know, I've been observing what it does to growths. And so, for example, when people come and they are saying, I have low back pain, and I find they have sebaceous cysts or even warts. And if I say, do you mind if I try doing some things to your wart or your cyst just to see what happens? What I know today is, you know, those finger warts, within 9 to 10 treatments, they can flatten out, they go away. What I do is I needle right there. I use those little tiny, small needles, and they go away. I had one myself. It was that one, almost half the size of a dime, bottom of my feet. 3 treatments, it went away. And then sebaceous cysts, same thing. They soften up, and then they create a little, they form a little opening, and then whatever was inside can be squeezed out. So I cannot tell you what it might do to cancer, because I don't get people that come to me and say, here, I have cancer, treat me. They go to the hospital. But I see people who are being treated with chemotherapy, and they come because they have a lot of complications like mouth sores, pain. And so they're saying, I know I'm dying, but I'm very uncomfortable. I'm seeking help to make the last days of my life more comfortable. And yes, it does. It helps them. As far as cancer, there is a film, and you can check this out from your video stores. It's called A Question of Faith. It's the story of a woman named Debbie Orr. Debbie was early 30s. She was diagnosed with lymphoma. This is cancer in the lymph nodes. And by the time she went to the physician for checkup, they claimed it was too far gone. So they said, Debbie, you just have to go home and get ready to die. You know, we cannot do anything for you. Not even chemo will work on you at this point. However, she really did not feel that sick. And she did not feel so debilitated and quote-unquote dying. So she said, well, if those MDs say I'm dying, what else can I do? Well, she went to Dr. Bernie Siegel in California, who taught her how to meditate and image the cells shrinking. And she went to another therapist, and she got on the macrobiotic diet. This is a vegetarian diet. And she exercised regularly. She was given this imagery, which is, in her mind, she's chopping the cells that are growing, that are cancer, and they're being, you know, chopped away. And then 3 months later, she went back for a checkup, and the doctor said, surprisingly, it's not gone, but it has not advanced. And this is most unusual. So for her, that was not enough. She wanted to hear that it was gone. So she thought, what else can I do? Then they referred her to an acupuncturist, and she added that to all those. And in the film, it says that on her next 3 months basis, which by now is 6 months since her initial diagnosis, they said it was spontaneous remission. They did not want to give credit to all these things that she had done, the meditation, the imagery. So, but that's just one story, okay? Debbie Orr, you can check that out. She went through this whole thing in a movie about her family being torn into two factions. One group saying, what are you doing? You know, why do you do all these things? Why don't you just get chemotherapy? And she says, well, they said, you know, even chemotherapy was too far gone. What do? Just stay home and die. So it was all these family factions not approving of what she was doing. And in the end, she had to say, it's my body, it's my choice. And then there was, when that movie was out, and it was probably 8 years ago, there was a follow-up talk show. I think at that time it was, who's the one in Chicago?
Phil Donahue.
Phil Donahue had a panel of people that were diagnosed with cancer but got over their cancer using holistic medicine. And it was all their stories. So I'm sure those kinds of stories are around. Personally, I do not have any experience reversing cancer. I wish I did. But like I said, most of the time they don't come to me when they're diagnosed with cancer. They go to the doctor.
Do you recommend any particular kinds of exercise?
Yes.
Like Tai Chi?
I believe that Tai Chi, Qigong, are you familiar with Qigong?
No.
And yoga are very good exercises because they just don't exercise the body, but also the mind. The energy can be increased. I believe that practitioners of Tai Chi or Qigong can actually cure their illness using these exercises. But generally, even when you're not into these forms of exercise, if you exercise whatever it is that you do, that you like to do, if you do it regularly, it's part of what you need to be healthy. I believe in supplementation, vitamin supplementation. I believe that as we get older, we need more and more. So for myself, for example, rather than popping prescription medications, I'd rather take, you know, fistful of vitamins every day to keep healthy. And at 52, I do not have any symptoms. A few gray hairs, that's all. And I'm healthier than when I was in my 20s. Right, Tom? That's my husband.
Yeah, I'll be healthy as well.
Also, I took up tennis 3 years ago. And I started biking when I was 40. So I'm healthier, more athletic in my old age, and I hope to be even more so as I get older.
It's
true for you too? Yeah. Oh, that's good to hear. Yes?
Are there herbs that people can take with a high cholesterol in place of the chemicals that the doctors have prescribed?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the ones that I recommend for high cholesterol instead of those is a combination of niacin, garlic, and omega-3. And then a high fiber drink like psyllium. Naturally, those three will also work if you have hypertension. There are forms of garlic of niacin that will not give you the flush. See, what happens with niacin is it's a vasodilator for the blood vessels, particularly from here up. And there are forms of niacin that will make you feel flushed when you take it. But there are formulations that you can buy, like niacinamide, or, you know, it will say in the label. If it's the non-flush kind, of course, that's what you prefer. But try that combination, omega-3 or flaxseed oil, garlic, and what was the third one I said?
Nice.
Yeah, so I have Alzheimer's now.
When you say garlic, do you mean the natural garlic or?
Garlic that comes in capsules.
Oh, capsules.
Mm-hmm. There's another thing that I think I need to share with you. You know the ear lobe here? If there is, it should be nice and smooth. You know, it should not have a crease. And then all of a sudden you see earlobes that have a crease that goes like this. So here's your earlobe. There's a crease that goes like so. Mm-hmm. That's almost more predictive than any other test of a heart disease. You probably have high cholesterol. The reason for that, so you can look at each other's ears and see who has that crease. And if you have that crease, I'd say start taking the garlic, the niacin, and the omega-3 and the psyllium, and start exercising. You will flatten out again. The reason this gets decreased is because when you build up the plaque in the arteries to your heart, the blood supply to this part of your ear comes from that. And with chronic depletion of blood supply to your ears, it develops that crease. And I have not been wrong yet. Whenever I've said to a person, you have the beginnings of the crease or you have a marked crease in your earlobe, go have your cholesterol and your heart checked. And they have high cholesterol or heart disease. And it can be reversed. I've had people come back few months after I've given them these programs, and it flattened out. And one person said her father had the surgery, and he had a crease, and it flattened out too after they cleaned it out. Mm-hmm. So there's really a correlation between that crease mm-hmm. and the amount of blood supply because of clogged blood vessels. So how many of you found a crease? You did? You have one?
She says, I can't see it.
Do you have a history of heart disease?
Yeah. Well, and my father.
Okay. So start taking some of those things.
Come right.
Well, it's time.
How do we find a good acupuncturist? How do we know?
Usually, you know, people find good acupuncturists by word of mouth, friends, you know, go to somebody who's a good acupuncturist. But like I said, you can even start with calling this number in Washington, D.C. It's the NCCA, National Commission for the Certification of Acupuncturists. They're in the phone book.
NCCA.
NCCA. And have them send you a list of certified practitioners in your state. They'll probably say 73. So you might as well just write and say, NCCA, Washington, D.C., here's my $3. Send me the list of certified acupuncturists in my state.